Welcome to the Math Ed Podcast. My name is Sam Otten from the University of Missouri, and today I am joined by three scholars from the University of Central Florida. Siddhi Desai is a PhD candidate in mathematics education. Siddhi, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Sarah Bush is a professor of K-12 STEM education at Central Florida. So Sarah, good to talk to you also.
Thanks so much for having us.
And finally, we are also joined by Farshid Safi, who is an associate professor of K-12 mathematics education. Farshid, good to talk to you again.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
We're going to be discussing Siddhi, Sarah, and Farshid's recent article in the Electronic Journal for Research in Science and Mathematics Education. And the article is titled, Mathematical Representations in the Teaching and Learning of Geometry, a Review of the Literature from the United States. And before we get into that article discussion, Siddhi, Sarah, and Farshid did ask me to start by acknowledging the hard work, the heart work, and the expertise of K-12 mathematics teachers. The ideas and the insights that they're going to share are built on previous research efforts, and it's all informed by the strengths that teachers bring to the classroom every day. But I do want to go into this literature review where you looked at the research, and I wonder if you could tell us what the original motivation was for doing this literature review on representations and geometry in the literature.
Sure. So some of my early work as an undergrad and master's student, along with Dr. Safi and Dr. Bush, was really focused on representations and multiple senses of that word. So like representations in terms of mathematical representations, which was a project that Dr. Safi and I worked on when I was an undergrad student. And then also representations in terms of like people, fairness, and equity, which all three of us worked on when I was an undergraduate slash early master's student. And so particularly for this paper, that's kind of where the representations piece came in from. And then for the geometry piece, for my dissertation, I knew I wanted to focus on something relating to connections between math, art, culture, and history. And really just ways that we can integrate these ideas into our classroom teaching. And so geometry really allows us to have this natural way to have these conversations. So that's where the geometry piece came in from. And then this was just an initial piece that I wanted to really learn more about the progression and the ways that we teach and learn geometry in the United States and like what the current and past literature has said about it.
You know, and one thing that Siddhi's not mentioning is while her ideas about this work have been longstanding, even before she was in our graduate programs, you know, this actual literature review really, there was a little bit of push for it in her doctoral seminar class. We work for Writing for Publication, and in that class that I teach, and one of the things we talk about at the beginning of the semester is that, you know, they should focus on writing something that is going to eventually inform their dissertation. And Siddhi did such a great job being, you know, so thoughtful about that. And she just jumped in and pulled together what, you know, she had, you know, she could kind of look into the future of all the different areas of math she was wanting to pull into her dissertation and weave that into this literature review. You know, it just continued to grow after the course was over, and it was exciting to see it published. She did a great job.
And if I could add one more thing to that, Siddhi is a brilliant scholar, brilliant teacher, and also a phenomenal, brilliant artist. And so much of her own art focuses on geometry and geometric patterns. And so to not bring the literature, the research components, the teaching, and the geometry together almost felt like a disservice to her brilliance and her talent, and to also to push the field forward in these directions.
Yeah, that's excellent to hear how it all kind of came about. And now it's in the world where others can read and learn from it and think about these ideas. I am curious about, you know, I've done literature reviews, and probably a lot of the listeners have pulled together some articles to sort of make a case for something or to draw a theme. But in this case, you were drawing from multiple threads as you were talking about. And so I wonder about that process of gathering and analyzing the research literature. What was the most fun aspect of that process? And then also maybe what sort of came to be a challenging part of that process?
So I think the most fun part was definitely looking into that literature, because I think, as we've talked about with the previous question, I've been interested in geometry, and it's been more so through like some of the art connections and then also the, just the cultural connections. But really learning and delving deeper into the literature was definitely a lot of fun. I think one of the more challenging parts, and the reason that we really limited it to the United States, was because there is a lot of literature on geometry, and especially a lot of international literature on this topic. So we really, for the purpose of this paper, wanted to narrow it down to be more manageable. And then as Dr. Bush said, it was for a course assignment originally. So definitely wanted to be manageable for that assignment as well. Even though we did focus on the US for this particular paper, particularly the frameworks, we did draw on from a lot of international literature just because those do inform the ways that we teach and learn geometry in the US. And then a lot of my current work, which is focused on ethnomodeling and ethnomathematics combined with geometry, is absolutely informed by international perspectives, both because of the multicultural aspects and the ethnomathematics aspect really draw on international literature and research.
Yeah, I think that's a good clarification that the literature review is focusing on studies in the United States, but those studies use ideas from other parts of the world sometimes. And so that in that way, it makes its way into this. I wanted to kind of lay out the three main research questions that you answered here, and then I want to hear a little bit of what you found on each of these three elements. The first one is about those frameworks, like which frameworks have guided the teaching and learning of geometry in the US. Then you also had a question about what does the teaching and learning of geometry in the US look like, and what is the role of mathematical representations in the teaching and learning of geometry? So let's go ahead and take those one at a time. So first of all, what was a main theme that came out when you looked at the literature with regard to frameworks for geometry teaching and learning?
One of the reasons that we added in, so while the paper focused on mathematical representations, one of the reasons that we really added in the framework section was because thinking about the evolution of the teaching and learning of geometry in the US to look at some of those international perspectives and bring that in. And then I think more so with a lot of the recent work I'm doing, I think we do need more updated frameworks. And this isn't included in the paper, but I know that's something that I'm thinking through and that the three of us are thinking through together, is really creating or having an updated framework that allows us to bring in students' identities and really have that representation within our geometry classroom.
I think one of the aspects as far as the frameworks are concerned is to make sure that we don't keep who we are as people, whether it's our students in our schools or who we are as scholars, we don't separate our lived experiences from our academic experiences. And so the way that these frameworks allow for that marriage to kind of intentionally stay together across experiences, whether they're school experiences or lived experiences, I think the frameworks and the analysis that Siddhi brilliantly led allows us to take a look at how it is that it can inform our habits of mind, as well as the different concepts that we explore.
All right. And so if we move on, what was a main theme that emerged with regard to the teaching and learning of geometry?
So geometry is the only content domain that spans our current K-12 standards, but yet it continues to be the lowest scored domain on international exams. So really looking into the literature and like, what are we doing? If it is something that goes across K-12, why is it that students are still struggling with it on these international exams? And so a lot of the literature revealed that at the elementary level, we give students a lot of opportunities to play with concrete objects. But by the time that they get to middle school or high school, we're really focusing on the algebraic or like the formulaic aspects of geometry and then the proofs. And then even within the literature that connects to the early childhood and elementary school, a lot of the early ones focus on a lot of the play and explorations aspects. However, when we get to middle school, high school, it's really just proofs and how do we teach proofs. So I think we really do a disservice to geometry, especially at the high school level, when it almost becomes like algebra 1.5. Because in the typical high school sequence, we go algebra 1, geometry, and then algebra 2. So geometry often just serves as like the pathway between the two, or like the link between the two, without really some of that explorations of the geometry that exists in the world around us.
You know, I think I would agree with Siddhi. And, you know, I think that it helped sort of solidify just the idea that I always think about with geometry is geometry is just so rich with opportunities to engage students in deep, meaningful tasks that have fantastic visual representations and models and multiple representations that can be used. And I know that, you know, was related to the third question as well. But there's so many missed opportunities that, you know, I hope as a field that we can continue to strive to just provide better learning opportunities for students through taking, you know, some of the suggestions from the literature.
Yeah, I've thought about geometry in the past when I taught geometry courses for our pre-service teachers. I don't know if this is up to date or not, but I know, you know, 5 to 8 years ago, the United States falling behind international countries almost could entirely be explained by our geometry scores. It's kind of like we're doing quite well if you just look at algebra, and we're actually doing decently well if you look at stats. And almost the single anchor that is like pulling the United States down is the geometry thing, which a lot of people are surprised to hear that. They sort of think it's just like evenly spread across all the topics. But at least back when I was teaching that course, that was sort of the case. So it's interesting to hear about it. I've also heard people talk about geometry in the US being, you define the shapes over and over again, like define the shapes. Yep, we define them. Yep, we define them. Yep, we sorted them again, you know, over and over. And then all of a sudden proofs. And then that's kind of geometry. But I don't know if that's kind of what you saw, if that makes sense, or if that's just more people's impression of it.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting just listening to you talk about that. A lot of times in conversations with prospective teachers, you talk about how the connections and the relevance of geometry, it is there in the early elementary grades. And then it's almost as if the, once the focus goes from exploring 3D objects to 2D to be able to take a look at the attributes and the different characteristics, then it's almost like their relevance and the connections to their daily experiences ceases to be there explicitly. In a lot of cultures around the world, that connection is there in architecture and in art, and it is here too. But it's just that in many cultures historically, that geometry sort of takes the place of things that could not be written and expressed verbally. And so they're expressed geometrically. And then that is extended in school experiences. And I think that part sort of should stay connected in our teaching and learning of geometry throughout school.
You know, Farshid, when I think about what you just said, you know, I think about, especially in the middle grades and that whole seemingly disconnect between the really great concrete things that can be happening in conceptual learning that can be happening in elementary. And then that, you know, oftentimes the push to formal proof in high school and, you know, middle school in particular, and this is talked about some of the Catalyzing Change series, you know, in particular, it's just so ripe with opportunities to focus on generalizations and justifications in geometry. And I think more of that would be and is an exciting way to, you know, even, you know, get students more prepared for the high school content, but the high school content, as Siddhi said, really should also be much more conceptual focused and balanced. And we should still be, you know, looking at things very concretely. We should still see the art and the beauty and those real life connections in geometry. There's just so many opportunities to do so, which of course is the focus of Siddhi's dissertation work. So, you know, she knows the most about this.
Mm-hmm. It also, Sarah, what you just mentioned reminds me of a conversation we had with Siddhi when we were co-teaching one of our methods courses together. And we were talking about extensions of geometry from middle school to high school and even post-secondary mathematics. And we were talking about how the geometry of different fruits and how slices sort of lend themselves so naturally. And everybody can relate to that, but they have difficulty in seeing the 2D to 3D connections. Mm-hmm. And yet it's all around us. And so how explicitly can we use the teaching and learning of geometry in our school setting to remain connected to our experiences outside of the classroom?
I think also to add on to some of what Dr. Bush was saying earlier about just the catalyzing change aspect. So we talk a lot about like the bringing in and broadening the purposes of learning math to include some of that wonder, joy, and beauty of mathematics and geometry. Just the geometry around the world. And I mean, geometry itself means the study of the world. So the word itself lends to studying what is around us naturally, but we don't often bring that into our classroom. So I think if we're able to leverage what the power of geometry and what it, the existence of it around the world, then I think we can bring in some of that wonder, joy, and beauty that we would like to bring into our classrooms.
I know representations are a big part of that too, and part of the draw for doing this analysis. So I wanted to finish with that question that you had in the study about the role of math representation. So what's a theme that came to you from that analysis?
So we touched upon it a little bit already, but I think one of the big things or big ideas that we noticed was when we move on from early childhood and elementary to middle school and high school, a lot of the visual and the physical representations tend to disappear. And we focus on or emphasize the symbolic and the verbal. And so how do we really leverage some of those multiple representations throughout our K-12 sequence. And in the paper, we talk about just leveraging the power of technology. So we have a lot of dynamic technology available to us, and that allows us to really bring in and connect within and across the representations. So how do we leverage some of that into our classrooms from both the elementary and early childhood level, but also at the middle school and high school level?
Now I want to just zoom us out a little bit. And having done this analysis and including all these different sort of dimensions of the analysis and having read quite a lot of work, you know, across the literature, what would you say is a new insight or a takeaway that came from this analysis?
I'm not sure if we wrote it this way in the article, but to me, you know, this is very simplistic, but, you know, the work is out there and we know, you know, geometry is rich with those opportunities to engage students in so many interdisciplinary ways, with deep learning and mathematics, incorporating multiple representations. So we've kind of already have, we know that, we kind of have the answer. So we just need to, you know, as a field, you know, embrace that and work to build structures and systems so that becomes commonplace rather than, you know, happening in pockets. So how do we work, you know, with schools and districts and, you know, teachers and teacher leaders to help, you know, make that structure and that way kind of just the way of being when it comes to geometry learning? And also how can we make sure as a field that the learning of geometry isn't the thing that's happening last and it's much more intentional. And of course I know sometimes it, you know, I'm sure it is, but you know, I'm talking in generalities here, but you know, just those are my takeaways. Again, that's, you know, a simplistic takeaway, but big picture, if you're thinking 10,000 foot view, you know, this isn't a new area of discovery. This is an area that, you know, as Citi said, it's the one content domain that already spans throughout the entire K-12, you know, student schooling experience in mathematics.
Sarah, that also makes me think of a different collaboration that the three of us were on related to understanding geometry and in making sense of gerrymandering. Mm-hmm. So when we worked on that, understanding geometry absolutely allows for our students and for us to connect to issues related to not only equity, but also other implications related to our communities. And so if we don't engage our students in such opportunities to understand geometry and mathematics more broadly, then we're actually not providing opportunities for our students to have the kind of mathematical literacy opportunities in their school settings. So I think it's an extension, but it's also, it connects with the purposes of learning and doing mathematics.
Absolutely. And to add on to that, so my biggest takeaway was, I think, connected to what we talked about in the paper, but also some of the recent work that I've been doing, as well as the three of us have been doing collaboratively, in thinking about how we can really leverage the power of multiple representations and at the secondary level, but also at the K-12 level throughout, and just how that allows us, that approach allows us to bring in aspects of students' cultures and identities and really make mathematics and geometry more accessible to all of our students.
And if I could put in one other plug for the great research that Citi is doing as part of our dissertation, stay tuned for that, because it's not only brilliant, but it sort of gives us very tangible ways to connect aspects of our students' identities, culture, but also to stay true to the rigor and the commitment to understanding content, in this case, geometry, very thoroughly. So stay tuned for that.
Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, you can check out the article, Mathematical Representations in the Teaching and Learning of Geometry. And that's in the Electronic Journal for Research in Science and Mathematics Education. And I wanted to just say a remark about that journal, because I was involved as an associate editor until this year for that journal. And the reason I supported that journal and I, you know, am fond of it is because of the open access nature of, you know, allowing the research to be shared internationally just with anybody who has an internet connection. And Sarah Quebec-Fuentes is running the math side of the journal and Mark Bloom is running the science side. And it's also a really nice space for some connections between math and science, but also allowing, you know, room for mathematics work itself and science work itself. So I enjoy the journal and I enjoy the review process that is a very supportive fairly prompt kind of review process, which I appreciate. And the fact that it's a reasonable number of reviewers. You know, sometimes it's hard to fight through four or five reviewers when they're all contradicting each other and asking for different things. And so I feel like it's a good process and a good journal. And I wonder how your experience was with the journal.
Echoing all of that. So I think one of the main reasons, one of our main reasons for submitting to that journal was because of the open access nature of it. So it provides for more accessibility. And then also because it is international and some of the perspectives that we did include in this paper drew on from those international perspectives, and the work that we're doing next connects to some of those international perspectives as well.
You know, one thing I like about the journal, I completely agree with Sam's perspective as an associate editor, as well as Cities as leading this manuscript, but I really appreciate the different variety of manuscripts that they accept. They accept original research empirical papers, but they also accept theory papers, new perspectives and teaching strategies. It's really an outlet that I think embraces all the different facets of the work that faculty members and the stakeholders that we collaborate with and others that are doing this work as well. You know, it really represents all the different ways that we engage in mathematics teacher education and, of course, science and STEM and integrated teacher education as well. And I really like that about this journal.
All right, great. Well, I have one question that I like to ask at the end. This is from my friend Aaron Brackenecke. He used to ask it when he was in graduate school, and I've, you know, borrowed it from him for years now. And I want to hear from all three of you. I'd be curious what kind of variety of answers we might get. But you're all doing math education of one sort or another at the University of Central Florida. But I wonder if you weren't in math education, what might you imagine doing as an alternative career? So I'm going to start with City.
So I'd say probably something with art or photography. So when I applied to my undergrad program, I actually applied to both education programs as well as art programs because I was debating between the two. So I'd say art or photography.
Great. Sarah.
Well, I think if I wasn't in the position I'm in, or wasn't academia or a former math teacher, I think I would love to be a realtor. I love houses. I'm obsessed with just looking at houses and thinking about what you can do, you know, and how you can change and update and all those sort of things. I also could see myself doing something with dogs. Again, I'm going totally different direction here, which I think I would actually do if I wasn't in my current position. So I think houses and dogs.
I see a collaboration that could happen though with City, because any realtor needs a very good photographer. That's actually what sells the house, you know. And then you could say, you know, which neighborhoods are dog friendly, and then you could mm-hmm. Work that in.
Can we invest in either of those two dreams? As far as what I would like to do if I was not involved in math education, it's probably twofold. One, would have to be financed by somebody else, but I would love to be sort of a cultural historical tour guide where we kind of go around the world and we partner up with people who can tell us about the history, the language, the culture, the food, but also the mathematics that exists in all their buildings and all their arts and all their literature. And just kind of learn in community, but on site. That's one that would be sort of if somebody else were paying for it.
With that one though, quick, like, are you saying you would want to be the cultural ambassador for a certain like part of the world, or do you want to sort of be involved in it all around the world in like various places?
I want to geek out and be a learner, but also be a liaison in other people's learning.
I see.
Yeah. And then the other one that's probably a little more tangible is if I could be some kind of an analyst to either a sports team, a movie studio, or a music industry person, where we use analytics and data to compare movies and music and or sports teams and players across time and place, that would be phenomenal.
All right. Well, interesting group of folks there down in Central Florida. I really very much appreciate the work that you did together, and it's great to have all of you here to talk about it. So thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.